Funpod.
Der sonnige Podcast.
This is Sunpod. My name is Michael and I welcome you to episode 260 of our podcast. Last week we performed the third Konsulfood conference about solar thermal food processing, and there in Faro in South Portugal I had the chance to record several interviews with some living legends of the solar cooking family, which we will hear in our next few issues. Today I begin with Pat McArdle, who tells us in her own words how she was inspired to use solar cookers during her work as an American diplomat in northern Afghanistan in 2005.
My name is Pat McArdle. I'm an American. I was an American diplomat for 27 years, and I was in the U.S. Navy before that for 4 years, and before that I was a Peace Corps volunteer, health education. And I became involved with solar cookers during my last overseas assignment, which was to northern Afghanistan. And I was not there to do anything with solar cookers. I was there for the U.S. government to report on the situation in northern Afghanistan.
When was this?
This was in 2005. I volunteered to go. So I was with a British infantry unit in northern Afghanistan. And we would go out on patrols and cover a lot of territory. And we would meet with the locals to talk about the Taliban was coming back or poppy cultivation, that sort of thing. And what I observed, I was there for a full year. What I observed in northern Afghanistan was that for at least 10 months of the year, it was sunny. It was cold in the winter and it was really hot in the summer, but it was sunny most of the year. And I also noticed that there were almost no trees. And people told me that there used to be forests on the mountains. We were the north of the Hindu Kush. And then it was the steppes that went north of us. So it was flat, but to the south of us was the Hindu Kush. And the foothills there were no more trees. There were orchards, but they told me that a lot of the orchards had been cut down during the Civil War for firewood. Mm-hmm. One day we were coming back from a patrol, and I saw along the side of the road these very young children, 4, 5, 6-year-old children, carrying big bundles of brush. And I asked our interpreter, who was with us, I said, what are they doing? And he said, well, they gather brush, there are no trees left, and they take that home so their mothers can have something to cook with. Well, I remembered suddenly, as we were driving along, and the sun was hitting us, it was March, it was cold, but it was sunny, I remembered that when I was a Girl Scout, Girl Guides, Girl mm-hmm. Scout, I was about 10 years old in California, and we built a solar box cooker for a project. And I remember that. It was a very simple cardboard and foil and glass and a black pot. That's all I remembered. But we cooked food. And so when we got back to our camp, I went on the internet, and I just typed in solar cookers. And up came the website of a nonprofit in Sacramento, California, called Solar Cookers International. And they had plans that you could print out and make. So I printed out the Cook-It and some box cookers and a tire cooker, about 5 different designs. And then in my free time, which was usually Friday, that Friday was our one day off a week, I slowly began to build these cookers out of cardboard and glass and tested them on the roof of our compound over the next month or two. And I found that the Cook-It was the best for my purposes because we had to walk on our patrols and I could fold it up and carry it, and it was very easy. The plastic bags, that was a problem, but I had one mission. I had to go to Uzbekistan and I had to drive from Afghanistan to Uzbekistan. So when we were in Tashkent, they had supermarkets, and I went in and bought those plastic bags that worked. So I had the plastic bags. And then when I'd finished and I tested it and it worked, the first village up in the Hindu Kush that I was going to demonstrate it, we got to the village, I set up the Cook-It, and there were a few men watching me. And these were illiterate villagers in the mountains with and it was still cold, and they were wrapped in blankets, and they had turbans and beards, and they didn't know what I was doing. But I opened up the Cook-It, which looks like a shiny clamshell, and I put I had a liter bottle of water, and I filled the pot with water, put the lid on it, put it in the plastic bag, and then we went in to meet with the head man in the village. And an hour later, we came out of our meeting, and of course, the water was boiling, and the bag was puffed up, and it was steamy, and you could hear the lid rattling. And instead of 5 men, now there were about 40 men, because the word had spread that there was some magic going on. So with my interpreter's help, I explained to these men how the sunlight bounced and heated the pot. And they all had to come up and touch the pot. They couldn't believe it. They were seeing it. So they all came up and they burned their hands on the pot. And they laughed. And then they said, "We have cardboard. Where do we get the shiny paper?" Well, that was aluminum foil. And they didn't sell aluminum foil anywhere that I knew of in northern Afghanistan. And then one of the men pulls out his cigarettes. And he lifts up the foil wrapper of the cigarettes. And he said, "We have the silver paper." So all the men smoke. And they all pulled up their cigarette foil and they said, "We can build our own solar cooker." The most amazing thing for me was that in that very short period of time, these illiterate mountain men had made a technology transfer. They saw what I did. They said, "We can make tea," because the men there drink tea all day long. And of course they burn the fuel that their children have to haul up from far, far away. So they figured this out, and they figured out what they could use to make it, which is their cigarette foil. I didn't want them smoking cigarettes, but I was still so impressed with that. And at that point, I went back and wrote a report back to the embassy. This was not what I was supposed to be doing, but I was very impressed. And I was really surprised by the response. The USAID, which is our government branch that does development projects, they said, "Oh, we've heard of solar cooking. It doesn't work. We're not interested." And that was the first time I ran into this right after being so excited. And I, at that point, when I came back to the United States, I retired from the State Department. And I became very involved in promoting solar cookers and continued to run into this for many years.
Mm-hmm. This initial experience, had it any consequences for your personal life or personal use of solar cookers after that?
Yes, because when I came home, of course, I immediately built some more solar cookers, and I had 6 months still at the State Department. So I organized a demonstration in the Department of State. There's a big inner courtyard, and I got permission built box cookers, and I had the panel cooker, the Cook-It. And then I met some people in Washington who were doing solar cooking, Louise Meyer and Dar Curtis. And they brought more, and we did a demonstration in the center courtyard of the State Department. We invited the science advisor and people from the Refugee Bureau, and we were cooking food for them. They were impressed, but they still... For some reason, there was enough skepticism that we weren't successful at that time. And then I went in 2006 to the conference in Granada, mm-hmm. which is the first one Celestino went to. Mm-hmm. And I saw all these other models of solar cookers. At that point, I was invited to join the board of Solar Cookers International,
yes.
and Solar Household Energy, and began building more and demonstrating more. And then I was invited 2 years later to go to a refugee camp in Chad, mm-hmm. where Cook-Its were being made and distributed. And I was asked to join an international group, there were 6 of us, to do an assessment of this project. And we did it, but we were critical of it, and the gentleman who was running it was not happy about mm-hmm. our criticism.
Yes, of course. What was the problem there?
Well, the problem was that the Cook-It works very well, but it's made of cardboard. So most of us, when we cook at home on our gas stoves or our electric stoves, we spill. You spill food when you're cooking.
Yes.
Well, if you spill it on a cardboard solar cooker, the cardboard starts to deteriorate and the foil starts to curl up. So these women in the desert, they would spill and the cookets would deteriorate and the plastic bag, which works very well, but these women don't have water to wash anything. Mm-hmm. Water is only used for drinking. Mm-hmm. They don't take baths. They don't wash their dishes. They clean everything with sand. Water is so precious for them. So these bags, after about 2 weeks, would become so clouded that you couldn't use them anymore. Mm-hmm. And the cookets, after a month or two, they're also termites, which would eat the cardboard, the termite bugs. So they weren't lasting. And so while we were there, the first time in 2009, all of us met, we interviewed several hundred women. We went to their homes, and they were all using cookets. And they also knew we were coming. So it was not a completely valid assessment, because he made sure they all had new cookets, and they were... And they all came at the end of our assessment. Several hundred women came with cookets and cooked food for several hundred people. And I have photographs. I have a YouTube channel called Solar Wind Mama, where I have videos of, I think, about 20 videos on there.
Okay.
Very impressive. We were all impressed, but we said to this gentleman, he's a Dutch Netherlands man, very visionary man, but we said, this model is not sustainable. There are 20,000 refugees in this camp, and you have about 15 women making the cardboard cookets. But the camp is huge, and women get their cardboard cooket in two plastic bags, and they go back to their end of the camp after a month or two. And he said, no, they last longer. We said, no, they don't. They don't last longer. Mm-hmm. And the plastic bags have to be replaced. And the United Nations didn't like the idea of handing out thousands of plastic bags in the camps. Yes. I understand that.
Yeah.
And so we suggested box cookers. We suggested different materials. And he was not interested. And it was very frustrating. So we did that first report, but it was for him. Mm-hmm. We volunteered. We weren't paid to go, but he paid our airfare. So we gave him our report, and then we asked eventually if he would let us release it, and he did, but he didn't agree with us. And there was a company or a nonprofit in Los Angeles called Jewish World Watch, which was supporting his project. And about 5 years later, they contacted me again and asked if I would go back again and do another assessment, but they weren't going to tell him that I was coming. Mm-hmm. So I went back and with three other people, and this time he didn't know we were there, but a day after we got there, the word spread and he showed up at the camp. Mm-hmm. But it was not time for him to go get the women. So what we saw was that almost no one was using the cookets. And we saw the cookets that the women had were in very bad condition. Mm-hmm. He was starting to charge a little bit. These people have almost no money. And again, still using the plastic bags. And so I wrote a report. This was for Jewish World Watch. And it was a very honest report. And we again said, you need to use a different solar cooker. And he was not interested. So they stopped funding it. And he's since then he holds me responsible for that. But I had to report what I saw.
Of course. Do you know any positive examples of solar cookers being used in refugee camps?
No, and the reason is that the cooket is the one that has been distributed. Mostly, the cooket is not. It's a beautiful design. It works really well.
I have it in my garden.
but that particular design is not sustainable.
Yes.
And there's been so much misinformation about solar cooking technology that it's been very difficult to get significant funding for this. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a gentleman in California who I know, Roger Haynes, who took the cookit design and then refined it and made it out of the foil that you put in your windshield in the summertime to keep your car from getting too hot.
Yeah.
He's gone through several versions, and now he has a really good one. It's very durable. It does not need a plastic bag. He's tried to get funding for that, and he has gotten some funding from Rotary International, mm-hmm. but not on a significant scale. And we were going to do a test village, and I wrote the proposal for that 3 years ago. He was going to use his, and then we had several other solar cookers. We were going to test them all in a village, not in a refugee camp, because the refugee camps, you can't stay in the camp. You have to stay in the United Nations compound, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then you go in a convoy every day and you come out. So we wanted to first test it in the village. They still haven't gotten the funding for that. Mm-hmm. But my argument is that first you have to spend some money to go in and spend a couple months training a group of women. You can't just go in for a week or two and hand them these solar cookers.
Of course.
That's one. And you have to pay these women because they have to pay someone to cook food and take care of their children if they're really going to do this. So this proposal that I drafted includes 3 months working with a team of women, letting them use one of the Cook It model, but it's the Roger Haynes version, a parabolic and a box cooker. So each group would have 1 month using, and they'd rotate, mm-hmm. and they would cook their own recipes, local recipes, and they would fail, and then they'd try again. But they'd have the time, and they're getting paid, so they can keep their family going. It's not that expensive, I mean, when you consider some development projects, but it's mm-hmm. more than nonprofits mm-hmm. have.
Yeah.
And so the plan was also to teach them something called the integrated cooking method. I don't know, have you heard of that? It's a method, and I found that a lot of solar cooking manufacturers and nonprofits, they resist this as well. What it is teaching people how to use a solar cooker, but letting them first test different solar cookers and find one that fits. Mm-hmm. Because you have different manufacturers saying, we're going to use mine. Mm-hmm. But that may not be the right one. You have to let the women try different ones and see which one works best for them.
Yeah.
Then you can't solar cook at night. You can't solar cook on a cloudy day.
Yes.
So they have to have alternatives. And so by teaching them the integrated cooking method, you teach them mm-hmm. how to use the solar cooker and when you can use it. They have to have some kind of fuel-efficient stove. And you introduce that also in partnership with the organizations that are producing those. And then the third thing you teach them is how to make a retained heat basket, which is a very simple thing to make. Yes. Very simple, but very powerful. Even if they're cooking on a cloudy day, if they have to cook rice and beans and meat, they can put that on their stove, get it boiling, put it in a retained heat basket and close it, and mm-hmm. it'll finish cooking. Then they can put the next pot on. I did this once at the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I cooked for about 15 people mm-hmm. on a day that was sunny and then it got cloudy, and I had 4 retained heat baskets and 1 little stove, and we just kept moving them. So you can save fuel if it's a cloudy day, but if it's a sunny day, you can cook your noon meal from 9 until noon and serve it, and then you can put your dinner into your solar cooker, and it'll be finished around 4, and then you put it in the retained heat basket, mm-hmm. and your family can have a hot meal at 7 o'clock at night. So teaching people that takes longer, but it's very effective if you do it. Mm-hmm. And I have run into resistance from even solar cooking organizations because they don't want to work with, some of them don't want to work with the wood-burning stove people. And others say it's just too much, the women can't learn that. But yeah, they can learn it. It's not rocket science. It's very simple.
Yeah.
So for those reasons, one, trying to push a particular solar cooker onto a group rather than let them pick That's one problem. Not teaching the integrated cooking method is another problem I see that's slowing us down. Mm-hmm. And the third is funding a long training for a group of core women who can, or men, but mainly it's women who cook. Let them spend a couple of months doing this before they go out and demonstrate it. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening yet. And I think that's what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. But we need funding. And there's a lot of disinformation about solar cooking. Mm-hmm. That my opinion is that it's being promoted, not openly, but by the fossil fuel industry. Because, as I mentioned when we were talking earlier, mm-hmm. A World Bank economist saw that the push by the World LPG Association to sell small canisters and LPG stoves to the 3 billion people who still cook over wood is a $100 billion industry. Now, if those people had access to solar cookers and retained heat baskets and a small wood stove that would not use the amount of wood they're using now, mm-hmm. that would cut into that $100 billion market. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's my theory.
Yes, sounds very reasonable. Nevertheless, we go forward and do our best. Now we are meeting just before the next Consul Food Conference in Faro. Why have you come here?
I've come here this time to learn. I'm not a solar cooker designer. My garage is full of solar cookers, just like Celestino's. Mm-hmm. And I demonstrate them in Southern California. I write about them. But I haven't been deeply involved for the last couple of years. And so I am working on an article about what's holding back this technology. Mm-hmm. Because I have seen it work. I know it works and I know how simple it is. And so I've come to learn and talk to people. I know some of the people presenting, but a lot of them I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say and to sharing my thoughts with them.
Mm-hmm. One more question. I'm just thinking about, does the climate debate give you wind from behind? Does it? I'm looking for the English expression. Start new.
I know what you're asking. Does climate change make it easier to promote this technology?
Yes.
You would think so, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of obvious. But, for example, there is a professor, he's an Indian American, his name is Professor Ramanathan, mm-hmm. at University of California at San Diego.
Okay.
He writes about climate change and about black carbon, mm-hmm. which in the Indian subcontinent is causing... Mm-hmm. That because the black carbon, a lot of it is from either burning forests, mm-hmm. like in Brazil, or just people cooking over wood or charcoal. Mm-hmm. It's causing black carbon. And he wrote in one of his papers several years ago that solar cooking, the use of solar cookers, could reduce this. But then he changed his mind, and I was in touch with him about 2 years ago. And I asked him why, and he said, well, he tried the solar cookers at home, and they just were too hard to use. And so he doesn't think that's really effective now. So now he is also more inclined to promote things like LPG, mm-hmm. because at the point of use, there are no emissions. However, at the point of extraction... And the
fracking and so on.
Fracking and then shipping in cargo ships that use bunker fuel and trucks to deliver. Yes, it is contributing to global warming, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
I thought that there is this famous quote from Winston Churchill that the Americans do everything right after they have tried out every possibility to do it wrong. And maybe now we are at a turning point. You have tried out everything wrong with using fossil fuels and mm-hmm. so on. And I mean, the new Tesla car comes from America. And new technologies, so this could help to promote Solar Cookers too, I think. So that the climate, the mental climate could be better than it was in all the years before.
I think so. As I said, for the last couple of years, I have continued to demonstrate in Southern California. I do demonstrations all over the place. But I haven't been as involved as I was, say, five or six years ago. And I would like to start up again, becoming more involved in this. And I think hearing all the presentations out and talking to people the next few days, I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah,
It's going to give me more impetus.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get my article published. I have spent several years gathering the documentation that I need to really prove my point.
Yeah.
And yes, I do think the people's opinion is changing. And I think some of the folks who are going to speak to us are going after a commercial market, which is really good. Because if middle-class people use this technology, then it's even more attractive to very poor people. And the example is cell phones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, cell phones, the last time I was in the refugee camp, about 5 years ago, I had my cell phone with me, but I had it to take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But I had it turned on. I'd forgotten that it was. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call from my daughter. I was in the middle of a refugee camp in Chad.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, how can this be? And there was a cell phone tower, and I did see some people using cell phones. Now, cell phone technology, of course, was developed by big industry, and they spent billions of dollars to develop the technology. But once people saw how useful it was, and it was made well, made more very durable, they wanted it too. And cell phones are cheap.
Yeah.
They're cheaper than they were 10 years ago, but they're not cheap, but they want them. And I think the same could be true of solar cookers. If people could see how they can be used and how they reduce, how they save money, I think more will become available, more people will use them, but they have to be durable. And people have to understand how to use them in combination. I think that's really important. And that's not happening yet.
Do you think that all technology has been developed? Or do you expect anything new?
Oh, well, there's a professor in Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. It's a university in California. Named Peter Schwartz. He's a physics professor, and he's been involved in, he started using the Scheffler. He built Schefflers, and he taught his students, and then they were trying different designs. Well, what he's come up with now is one solar panel. It's about a meter square solar panel, and a pot, a big pot, and a big insulated basket. It's like a retained heat basket. And he puts the pot in this retained heat basket, wires to a one heat probe that goes in there, and he is able to cook with that using one solar panel, which is not that expensive.
Yeah.
So it's still a prototype. I think he's testing it now in Uganda. He got a grant to test about 20 in a village. That's solar cooking. But it's a whole different kind of solar cooking because you can cook in your house and you have your little one solar panel on your roof. Most Africans cannot afford what I have on my roof. I have enough solar panels to power my house and my car. But one panel, one solar panel can power this pot, which can be inside their hut. And they can put the food in and then go out to the field. And the solar energy is going to heat that food. And they come back in the evening, they have a pot of food. That's solar cooking, but it's a different, it's photovoltaic solar cooking. There's another designer in Northern California who uses Fresnel lenses. And a professor, a late professor, David Gordon Wilson, was a MIT engineering professor. And I visited his house about 3 years ago to see his design. He passed away, sadly, this year. He developed a Fresnel lens that's enclosed, because a Fresnel lens is dangerous. It's really dangerous.
I know.
And and it heats a molten salt unit mm-hmm. at the bottom.
Okay.
And it tracks the sun.
Yeah.
He only had the prototype. He had not found investors.
Mm-hmm.
So you set it up in the morning. It tracks the sun. And then the woman comes home from work in the evening, removes the molten, takes it in the house, and it's mm-hmm. a burner. Mm-hmm. And she can cook with it.
Yeah.
So there's more. There's probably more out there. I hope to hear more at the presentations here. But the one big problem is investors,
yeah.
getting investors. Mm. That's the biggest problem.
Are you optimistic about it?
I am cautiously optimistic. I mean, it's so, as we just saw outside here, it is such a simple technology.
Yeah.
And it's so powerful. You know, we boil water for coffee in 10 minutes
mm-hmm.
using sun
mm-hmm.
in the winter
mm-hmm.
Where the sun is low in the sky. It has huge, huge potential, especially for the 3 billion people who still cook over wood. And something when I give talks, I point out, I was born in 1947. And in 1947, the whole world population was under 3 billion. There mm-hmm. weren't even 3 billion people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're 7.5 billion. But 3 billion, more people than were alive when I was born, cook over open fires.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big market.
Yeah.
Now, the fossil fuel industry sees that as a big market for LPG. But if we're ever going to take care of warming our planet, we really have to stop mm-hmm. fracking.
Mm-hmm.
We have to stop burning fuel that was made millions of years ago and start mm-hmm. using the sun.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope we'll do, and that's why I'm here.
Okay, fine. Thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Sunpod.
Der sonnige Podcast.
Positive Impulse für eine lebenswerte Welt, wie wir sie uns wünschen. Um neue Ideen bekannt zu machen, brauchen wir eure Hilfe durch Rückmeldungen und Unterstützung aus der Hörerschaft. Kommentare sind willkommen, entweder über den Blog www.sunpod.de oder per E-Mail. Die Kontaktdaten findet ihr im Bereich Die Autoren. Finanziell könnt ihr unser Ideenradio via Flatter, PayPal oder Überweisung fördern. Details hierzu findet ihr auf der Homepage www.sunpod.de im Bereich über Sunpod. Vielen Dank für eure Mithilfe.